You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino.
And for the first time since 2019, the University of Washington's men's basketball head coach has won a game in the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
Granted, it was not for UW, but the Huskies have a new coach. They don't have an athletic director at the moment, but they do have a new men's basketball head coach. Is what we sort of anticipated for a period of time became official on Monday morning with Danny Sprinkle and accepting the job less than 24 hours after his Utah State team saw its season come to an end against Purdue. You've been confident all along that Sprinkle was going to be the guy. What's your reaction to this becoming official?
I mean, there was just so much from the initial message about Mike Hopkins being let go of. The first message that we saw about that was Utah State's Danny Sprinkle expected to be a strong candidate. And that never wavered throughout any sort of time period. I think it was more like there was the first post about he's expected to be let go. Then it was Mike Hopkins was let go at the end of the season. And both of those pieces, each one of them said Danny Sprinkle expected to be a target candidate. You came back with also the relationship to UW and the history with UW. It just felt like it was such a perfect match with the right coach at the right time. And that's what really matters in these coaching searches, because you are having to invest in multiple years of somebody, is that you do find the right coach at the right time. And then it is somebody who's out there and ready to take over a program like this. And the more that we've heard and researched about Danny Sprinkle, I feel like he's the one. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, is a reminder that family connection. His dad, Bill, played football at UW, so there's always been a tie to the Huskies specifically for him, and that's something that's going to that was obviously a factor, because he was a candidate for other jobs coming off of three consecutive NCAA tournament runs at two different schools. Had done it previously at his alma mater, Montana State. This one year at Utah State, where, as we talked about last week, the entire roster basically turned over, almost entirely players that were recruited by Danny Sprinkle. So very different from the Mike Hopkins situation, where he came into a UW program that had been built by Lorenzo Romar and was able to kind of get more out of those same players. It was a different situation where he went into a school that had been successful, but with an entirely new roster.
Now, the brought in his own new roster as well,
including a couple of players who came with him from Montana State, one of whom became the Mountain West Conference Player of the Year, which was a
so wild
twist.
That he was finding these players at Montana State. You really wonder how much coaching matters, because, like, if he's at Montana State, that's where he was recruited. I mean, maybe Danny Sprinkle is just able to find a diamond in the rough or whatever, but the Mountain West is not a bad conference. So to find somebody who is going to be the Mountain West Player of the Year immediately after that is pretty impressive.
I mean, it raises some interesting questions about whether any of those players will be following him to UW, but we can sort of address that later.
Yeah, let's go through that in a little bit. Let's talk about Danny Sprinkle first, because he's going to outlast all those players.
Well, we need to talk about the most important thing here.
What's that?
So you'll recall that Cal State Fullerton is a friend of the pod.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Do you know where Danny Sprinkle coached immediately before he got the Montana State head coaching job?
Cal State Fullerton. Also Northridge, enemy of the pod.
Yes. Okay. So you did the research as well. The fact that it was both Northridge and Fullerton was the funniest possible outcome. So he worked there under Diedrich Taylor, who I mentioned was the reason that Cal State Fullerton is a friend of the pod, because he's the head coach and an acquaintance of mine. So, that is an interesting connection to monitor, and the very, very funny coincidence. I legitimately had no idea of any of this when we had that conversation. It wasn't until like Friday night when I was watching Utah State win their game that I read his bio and learned this information.
But I mean, Danny Sprinkle, I think we talked about this. He's the Kalen DeBoer candidate. He's somebody who doesn't have a ton of experience as a head coach. It's just those four seasons, right? Three seasons at Montana State.
I believe it's four at Montana State.
Five seasons total. So those four at Montana State, the last two going to the NCAA tournament, clearly built that program. I mean, I think Montana State has had a few ups and downs, but being able to take them to the NCAA tournament back-to-back years is pretty impressive. And then to be able to translate it very quickly to the Mountain West, where he not only made the tournament, he made it as a 9 seed. Were they an 8 or a 9?
They were an 8.
Made it as an 8 seed. So on the top half of the bracket, in his first season at Utah State, which is impressive already, but then winning a game in the NCAA tournament. I feel like he won just enough. He won just enough games in the NCAA tournament for us. Winning one was great. Winning two would have been excessive.
Well, it would have delayed this announcement at the very least. That's for sure.
But
you do wonder if he would have become on the radar of some of the higher profile schools that were, you know, filling job openings, although Michigan had already made their hire over the weekend with Dusty May from Florida Atlantic getting that job. Vanderbilt, the reports suggest, I believe it was Jeff Goodman of Stadium Hoops, who very narrowly beat Percy Allen, as far as I could tell, to breaking this news on Twitter, who mentioned that Vanderbilt made a strong push for Sprinkle in recent hours. But one of the things that seems to be clear here is, even though Troy Dannon is no longer the athletic director at UW, is now at Nebraska, he had set things up, lined everything up for Danny Sprinkle to take this job, even though the Huskies are currently without an athletic director.
Do we know anything about Danny Sprinkle and his style of play? Like, what should we expect on the court from Danny Sprinkle?
Yeah, that's something I did some research in. Is this obviously came as no particular surprise. Number one thing I'm going to say here, by the way, is you mentioned ups and downs for the Montana State program. They had made the tournament two times since 1951 when Danny Sprinkle was hired. So the two times they went under Danny Sprinkle were as many as, I'm not sure when they returned to Division One after that, but as the entire program history before that or after, as they didn't make it this season. So that's pretty good. Stylistically, some interesting things. You know, you look at his first year at Montana State and what he sort of prioritized. The offense went from 108th in adjusted KenPom ranking. They weren't a bad team the year before, to 270th. The defense went from 346th, and this is out of, you know, at that point, I think 350-some now, 360-some schools in Division I, to 159th. So he came and prioritized, we are going to get better defensively, and that's what they did, which is kind of different from what happened at Utah State, where this year's Utah State team certainly wasn't bad defensively, but actually was, you know, a little bit weaker defensively than some of his best Montana State teams. And it was the offense that really drove this year's success. They ranked 34th in adjusted offensive efficiency. So I think I like that, frankly, that there's a deal of pragmatism and, you know, willingness to adapt to what's on the roster. Now, the part you're not going to like.
Oh, no.
His teams don't tend to shoot a lot of threes.
I mean, if he wins games, I don't care.
It's true. But maybe not a departure from the Lorenzo Romar, Mike Hopkins lineage in that regard. But they particularly excelled this year, you know, that offense I mentioned inside the arc, where they shot 57% from the field, ranking 11th in the country. And his teams always get to the free throw line a lot. They were top five nationally in free throw rate his last two seasons at Montana State, 34th this year at Utah State. The Utah State team also played at a faster pace than its Montana State teams, but only 109th in average offensive possession length. So that is something that I think is going to be a change from, you know, most of Mike Hopkins' teams played quite fast offensively. And obviously that was always a focus for Lorenzo Romar.
So they tend to slow it down and play a little bit more half court offense.
For sure. And then the other thing they really believe in more than anything is taking away transition defense. That was that was one of the big strengths of this team. Offensively, not a big pick and roll team at Utah State. They were 243rd in the country in usage of that, plays that finished out of the pick and roll with either a shot, a turnover, a trip to the free throw line, or a shot that was created out of a pass from the pick and roll. They ranked 29th this year in plays finished from post-ups, which I think was probably mostly a function of personnel, and then 30th from cuts. So that's something that, you know, again, has not been a big part of UW offenses historically, is a lot of off-ball movement. You know, without the threes, in terms of synergy shot quality, Synergy Sports shot quality had them among the national leaders this year, because they just got so many layups and dunks was really a strength of this Utah State offense. So that's an exciting thing.
Did they have like a really good post passer or somebody like that?
So their offensive focal point was great Osabor, who was one of those players who followed Sprinkle from Montana State. Not an exceptional assist rate, but pretty good for a post player, I guess I would say. So he was the guy that kind of played through in the post. Then if you kind of look at one of the big questions about a coach is not just their X's and O's tendency, but how they're going to build and manage a program. You know, he really relied heavily on Division I newcomers his first 2 seasons at Montana State, mostly at that level, JC transfers rather than high school recruits. They started 2 transfers in 2023, and then obviously 4 this year, 2 of whom followed him from Montana State. Their fifth primary starter was a redshirt freshman, actually, who he inherited. That was the primary recruiting aspect of this year's team. And something else to watch is that Sprinkle historically has had a recruiting pipeline from England, of all places. Osibor was t one of 2 British starters on this year's Utah State team, and there were 3 other British players who played for him at Montana
Interesting.
State.
I mean, wherever you can find a weakness, I mean, obviously it's worked for Gonzaga along the way. UW has the NBA connection to England. I like it. Great Osabor. Is there eligibility left?
Yes. So he has played 3 years, 2 at Montana State, 1 at Utah State, has 1 remaining.
Okay.
Another guy I think to potentially watch as a transfer would be Isaac Johnson, who was one of the big stars. I believe it's Big Fish is his nickname. I believe that was a lot on the broadcast on Friday night for those who are watching that. He started out at Oregon, of all places, played there as a limited minutes as a freshman before transferring to Utah State. Didn't play a ton of minutes overall, but kind of came on as the season went along, I would say. Even though he started from day one, played 29 minutes on Friday night, and their win over TCU, scored 19 points on 6 of 10 shooting. Someone who's a 7-footer, so you know, could potentially have the size to make sense in the Pac-12.
Okay, Big Ten. Not
Good point.
the
I forget, so many changes. New coach,
Pac-12.
GM, new athletic director, new conference, all of the things. Anything else you're curious about with Sprinkle's history?
I mean, if you're Great Osabor and you're going from start, if you're like, this dude is like, come with me to Montana State, and then all of a sudden you find yourself playing in the Big Ten with the same coach, that is a wild transition. To be with one head coach throughout the way and to have made, he's made 3 consecutive NCAA tournaments. Obviously, you hope that it would be another after this, but that's kind of an interesting transition. I'm anticipating that a bulk of these players are going to come with him. I assume that his first job outside of recruiting his own players to UW, there's something that feels a little bit different than, say, Jed Fish. When Jed Fish was going from Arizona to UW and players that he built up the program with, he'd had success there. This is 1 year, and a lot of the players came with it from Montana. So it does feel to me like this is a little bit of a different transition. You kind of can't blame them for the opportunity to go play in the Big Ten if that opportunity presents itself. I think the other thing that he needs to do right away is make a call to Corin Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And that's obviously the most important player on this current UW roster to try to bring back, who's in the transfer portal already. I don't think it's going to happen, but.
According to Percy Allen's story in the Seattle Times, as of Sunday, had not actually submitted the notification of transfer, just said that he planned to.
Okay, he declared, I transfer. I'm entering the transfer portal.
And again, let's normalize. You can enter the transfer portal, look around, see what's out there for you, and decide to come back, as many players did with the UW football team this year. It's actually possible. I just don't know why people think that going into the transfer portal, which again is just a database,
I don't
just a
think
list of
people think
names,
that, but they're also many players did,
people do
but
think
I
that.
have some bad news for you. Many players didn't come back.
Oh, I mean, look, the likelihood if you
Corin
enter the transfer
Johnson, when
portal.
he looks out there, is probably going to find similar things to what many of those young Husky offensive linemen found in the transfer portal, is that very good programs want him to play there.
Without
So
question.
I think that is Danny Sprinkle has a lot of work to do with Corin Johnson, and I presumably doesn't have much of a history there. He can pitch his history of going to 3 consecutive NCAA tournaments at 2 different programs. At the same time, there are probably other schools who have pretty impressive backgrounds that could pitch that to Corin Johnson as well, plus playing time. So I don't think that's likely. It's still the first call that he should be making when he comes to UW.
Oh,
It's an
without
interesting
question.
thing, the program building piece of this. I think it was a bigger deal when Mike Hopkins came to UW, whatever 5 years ago that was. Longer. How long ago was that?
Mike Hopkins was hired here 7 years ago.
That 7 years ago, the whole recruiting landscape has changed in that time period. So when you talk about program building, I think the weight definitely pushes more toward understanding how to build a program the right way and what types of players you want. But I think coaching has become more emphasized in that rather than the recruiting piece, because high school recruiting is not that valuable in college basketball at the moment. I think it's nice to be able to get those players, but to have a good player come into a good program and keep them, it seems almost impossible with the idea of building somebody. It's really about going and getting those players in the transfer portal and building up a program that way and being able to coach those players once you have them, because the deck is being shuffled so often that you can't really say, oh, well, this person's going to go find high school players, you know, put a wall around the state of Washington, bring those players in. I think it's kind of just, I mean, you saw he has Jackson Grant on that current Utah State roster, who was a UW freshman, a highly recruited UW freshman, is now at Utah State and is not playing there. Like, the idea that you're going to build through high school recruiting just kind of isn't necessarily the right way to build at the moment. So for this one, I think it's almost impossible to even judge it at this point. The success on the court is what you can judge. And I think that's the most important piece, because if you're able to coach players that you found, many of whom at Montana State, to being NCAA tournament players, that's more important than going and getting all of the best freshmen.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it is useful. This is something that it's funny, the Utah State media covering them in Utah played up when he got hired there last year was his ability to recruit the West Coast, because that was not something that Ryan Odom, his predecessor, for all his success, had done, you know, had a lot of experience doing. He is somebody, one of his key players at Montana State, who I believe might still have 1 year of eligibility, is from Mount Si High School, I believe.
Is he still at Montana State?
Or yeah, he's to Utah? He stayed at Montana State.
Interesting.
So, you know, there is an element of that. Also, by the way, you mentioned him having Jackson Grant. His star player at Montana State on those two tournament teams was Raekwon Battle. Another
Oh, really?
Original UW recruit.
I always liked Raekwon Battle.
Yeah.
Is he gone?
He is out of eligibility. He was one of the players who he was the player who spurred the NCAA to have to declare two-time transfers eligible midseason because he was trying to get clearance and had sued to play at West Virginia, which is where he ended up this season. So that player from Mount Si High School is Tyler Patterson, who does have 1 year of remaining eligibility, hit 38% of threes last year, playing 89% of all possible minutes for Montana State. So that's another possibility.
I think there are also players who are out there that are not in the Sprinkle Extended Universe right now, who we should be anticipating are going to transfer.
Oh, of course.
UW.
Yeah. So, by the way, to correct myself, because looking at his player pledge reminds me, Montana State did make this year's tournament as a 16 seed, lost the first four game. So they didn't actually play in the final field of 64, but did win the Big Sky Conference again this season.
But I think when you look at this higher overall, it feels, it feels very Kalen DeBoer. It's basketball, it's not football, but has been able to coach players at basically every level, build a program out of a smaller university, short period of time out of a mid-major type university with success there, and really pretty great success at Utah State, considering that it was his first year to be an 8 seed. Is an impressive, impressive season.
To win the Mountain West outright their regular season in a year where they sent six teams to the NCAA tournament. You know, obviously the selection committee did not have the same feeling for those Mountain West teams as the projection systems did. And it wasn't a great weekend, but San Diego State did make the Sweet 16 and Utah State did win again.
I mean, how many Mountain West teams should have even made the Sweet 16?
Based on where they were seated?
Yeah, were there any four or higher outside? No. Like, San Diego State wasn't. So everybody finished more or less where they should. Like, Utah State should have won a game and then have lost to the one seed.
Well, several of the teams that should have won a game lost their opening game, I would say.
Still, it was an impressive gauntlet to get through.
Yeah.
And to win the Mountain West. To have done that, he's still relatively young. He's a coach who, if all things go right at UW, it's clear that he targeted UW as a place that he wanted to be. He probably could have waited out Michigan or something if he felt stronger about that.
I don't know about Michigan. But I think there's also an element of, look, you see the timing of all these things happening so quickly. Kyle Smith accepted the Stanford job reportedly on Monday morning. Yeah,
okay.
since you're not online, you're not seeing any of this. So, like, all of this is getting done, and I think there's a knowledge that, you know, maybe Vanderbilt tried to make a push, but, you know, some of the other schools had an idea that Sprinkle was headed to UW.
That it was done. He's somebody who, look, we don't know if he's good enough that he could go get a better job. If one of the highest tier of jobs is available at some point and he goes and wants to take it, then fair enough. Go do it. You know,
I mean, that's the big thing that we have to reemphasize in the wake of the Troy Dannon news. I got one other thing I want to get back to, but, you know, let's transition this to that and his departure but I just want for to say, Nebraska.
But before then, he has ties to UW in a way that Mike Hopkins never did. It's nice to have those ties to UW. He wanted to be here for all intents and purposes, right? The athletic director left. The program is in a pretty huge transition. He wanted this UW job. And I think that's an important piece. He's had success everywhere he's been, is relatively young. This is a great hire for UW. And I think we should be excited about UW basketball as they transition to the Big Ten in this moment.
Absolutely. So you know who's not excited about the UW program as they transition to the Big Ten? It turned out to be Troy Dannon, who, after less than 6 months on the job replacing Jen Cohen, left on Wednesday, hours after we recorded last week's Pelton cast, and didn't have a chance to mention this. And in the wake of the Kalen DeBoer departure, this has led to a renewed sense of angst from UW fans who do not like to deal with the fact that they are not, you know, at the top of the stepping stones in the NCAA Division I landscape, where it's okay to, you know, poach Danny Sprinkle away from Utah State, where they're having to hire a fourth head coach in like 6 years now. And where the big question when he was first hired is, hey, coach, you going to stay longer than the 2 years Ryan Odom did? And he said, I'm not planning on leaving, but they weren't planning on leaving either. And it turned out he lasted one season. Like, that's just kind of the reality. Like, this is, it's all in the game. If you can't complain about people leaving you for bigger opportunities, if you're going to hire people away from smaller opportunities.
Now, I am not willing to accept that Nebraska is a bigger opportunity than UW.
They did pay him a lot more money. Nearly double the salary, $1.8 million from the $1 million he got offered, which, like, what a come up for Troy Dannon. In 4 months, all he had to do was hire Jed Fish. Bam, 80% raise.
I mean,
well,
honestly,
don't necessarily,
like,
know that on Thursday.
Look, neither of the coaches he's hired, we'll give him at least partial credit for Danny Sprinkle. Neither of the coaches he's hired has played a game. So it's kind of a wild experience, but I do think the process for hiring, which is all you really should be judging this by, was the process right? The outcome, we don't know, right? But I don't think that Troy Dannon overthought either of these decisions. He kind of went out and hired the best possible coach for UW at that time. And I think the Jed Fish hire was great. I was excited about the Jed Fish hire. Like I told you, from the moment that I'd started doing more research about him, I'd wanted him over either of the Kansas coaches. One of them may be better long-term, but process-wise, it seemed like the right hire. Danny Sprinkle, process-wise, seems like the right hire. So I think Troy Dannon, in that short period of time, did a good job. I mean, as much as you could say that he did, he also lost probably the best coach in UW football history. But it seems as though he did whatever he could to try to go out and retain Kalen DeBoer as well, right, putting in front of him a good salary. It wasn't like, it's the allure of Alabama. There was nothing that Troy Dannon was going to do there. So,
I mean, there was a report that Utah State presented Sprinkle with an extension. Like, was it their fault that he left for UW? No, of course not. It's just a much bigger opportunity. Like, this, it's all in the game. This is how college sports works, for better or more, definitely in many ways for worse. So it does seem, from some of the kind of, it's tough to separate the reactions from, like, between the kind of sour eggs that we saw about Kalen DeBoer in particular, where no one was ever going to criticize anything Kalen DeBoer did when he was here. But as soon as he left, this guy isn't a program builder. He doesn't recruit freshmen. Mm-hmm. All of those complaints that were utterly ridiculous surfaced.
Facts. People started saying a bunch of, winning can cover up a lot of complaints. It is what that looks like. It's not necessarily even sour grapes. You can be thinking something in the back of your head, but then when you have an opportunity to actually get it out because the winning isn't happening, that's when those complaints start. People exist in a state of like 50-50 happy and complaining at all times. And winning is just like you shove those thoughts to the back. Losing is those thoughts get bigger. It's like a pie chart or whatever.
I guess that's hard for me to empathize with because I do not.
You have no complaints. Offense against Arizona State and you were like, I have no notes.
Well, you remember the guy that orchestrated the offense is still here. Go to the Seahawks offense. And I mean,
He's great.
I still feel good about it because I saw Robert Mays, I think it was Mays. Oh, no, it was Amina who tweeted about watching. No, it was, yeah, it was Mays who tweeted about watching the USC offense because he was watching Caleb Williams and then watching the UW offense under Michael Penix, you know, with Michael Penix Jr. and having the opposite reactions basically to them about how much better the UW offense and the UW team in particular was. So things are great with Ryan Grubb. I mean, that doesn't mean anything.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
But I would say the fact that he left so quickly, despite the salary factor, despite the fact that he was getting back to the Northwest, the Midwest, I should say, where he was from for Troy Dannon, I do think that there probably was some element of he came in and it just wasn't a cultural fit like they expected when they hired him. So, you know, from that standpoint, this is basically like just an extended job search for Jen Cohen's replacement that has now, you know, overlapped to coaching searches. You don't love going out and hiring someone who wasn't necessarily involved in the hiring process for Jed Fish and Danny Sprinkle.
I think if you're an eligible athletic director, knowing that you can come in and have these two coaches, because ultimately whoever this new athletic director is, any of their success, he's taking credit for their success.
He or
right?
She.
Troy Dannon didn't hire Kalen DeBoer, but Troy Dannon still benefited from Kalen DeBoer's success.
Without question. But I do think the element of like everybody, so the UW fans were very unhappy about not being a destination job or the destination job. It's always like they have to have UW ties. And, you know, my response to this is, well, gee, what if they hired an athletic director who grew up in the Seattle area, at least part of the time, was a diehard Husky fan. And, you know, the UW athletic director was their dream job. Obviously, she would never leave for another job in the same conference. That would never possibly happen, but it did with Jen Cohen. So just having the ties to the program doesn't automatically keep you around
UW ties,
when there are bigger opportunities.
Don James is from fucking Ohio, coached mostly in Florida, Michigan, a lot of Ohio before then, and then was the greatest UW football coach of all time. So I, for 17 years or something,
like
it doesn't matter.
Danny Sprinkle's ties to UW, his dad playing football here, that's a nice bonus. It's not the reason to hire him. Hire the best person that you think you can hire.
It's a reason for Danny Sprinkle to have maybe chosen this job vis-a-vis another job.
Exactly.
And that's great for Danny Sprinkle. If Danny Sprinkle loses, I mean, I think about somebody like Juwan Howard. It's a lot harder to hire people who were your people.
It's a bigger risk.
The pressure on those coaches to be that type of coach. Like, I don't want to feel bad about Will Conroy or something. I like Will Conroy. I don't want to have to hate Will Conroy or be mad at him or be like, well, it just didn't work out. You know, like, it's nice keeping those players there. You want to win games. Winning covers up basically all wounds.
So it ties together the two points I want to make here, which is number one, like with athletic director, it's a lot more nebulous than with a head coach. What actually makes a good one, what value they actually provide to the institution. But UW should hire the best athletic director they think they can find, not someone that they hire primarily because they're going to stay at UW, rather than take another job. And then that gets to the last piece of this, which is how Danny Sprinkle fills out his coaching staff and what's going to happen with a pair of, you know, assistants with ties to the program in Will Conroy and Quincy Pondexter. You know, Conroy, I think, is probably much more given. He's the one coach who made the transition between Lorenzo Romar and Mike Hopkins and stayed on to, you know, sort of facilitate that process, and, you know, has been a really important part of this program for a long period of time. Pondexter came in more recently, but has significant ties to not only, you know, everyone thinks about Corin Johnson, but when you're thinking about recruiting last year's players, Wesley Yates III, who was a huge, big-time recruit for UW to get, didn't end up playing last season because of injuries, took a red shirt, is another person who's going to be very important to re-recruit, and also was very involved in the recruitment of Zoom Diallo, incoming five-star freshman, who we haven't heard anything from him yet about reopening his recruiting after the coaching change.
I would strongly hope that Danny Sprinkle is wanting to bring those two coaches back, because I feel like this might be Will Conroy is just waiting for the right opportunity. And ultimately these assistant jobs, like there's the merit doesn't really have anything to do with it. It's if you win, you get a job. If you don't win, you don't. There's almost no way to judge what an assistant coach at a program, what they're doing without that. If he has the confidence in Danny Sprinkle And Danny Sprinkle has taken three consecutive teams to the NCAA tournament to get UW to the place of making the NCAA tournament. That is Will Conroy's opportunity to go get a head coaching job somewhere else. And I hope that he has that level of confidence in Danny Sprinkle, because or whatever, we don't know what the other opportunities are that are out there. Will Conroy needs to make the NCAA tournament as a lead assistant to be able to go get those right opportunities. So whether it is under Danny Sprinkle or somewhere else, I hope that he could see that it is under Danny Sprinkle, and I hope that he believes that, because it has happened. And with the type of players that may be following Danny Sprinkle here, there might be another strong season after. It would be great if he were to come back, because I love Will Conroy, and it would be helpful to help the program transition to have a person who's been there before to help the program with that transition, especially going to the Big Ten.
Yeah, which is an interesting piece of this. Like, normally you'd say, you know, Will Conroy understands the conference and things like that because he's been here, and Quincy Pondexter as well. Not quite the case this year. So I'm really going to be fascinated to see how Sprinkle fills out the staff. I wouldn't be surprised, even though he's someone who has 5 years of head coaching experience, if he brings in someone else who has head coaching experience to be part of the staff. That wasn't the case at Utah State, but I could see it potentially being the case here.
And I, on the Troy Dannon piece, the cultural fit thing, almost every new boss at a company, nobody likes the new boss because they come in with ways of doing things that they had done in the past, and they come in and they're like, well, this is how I do things. This is how I would like to be doing things here. It is a very normal thing to happen. The culture, if you're there long enough, eventually the culture changes in that person's image. Troy Dannon wasn't at UW long enough for that to have even happened. So, of course, Troy Dannon wasn't a cultural fit at this UW program, because this is still Jen Cohen's program, right? All of the people who are there, for the most part, were hired by Jen Cohen and liked the way that things were going under Jen Cohen. Troy Dannon didn't even have time to really impart himself. He came in mid-football season. So they didn't even play a new football season with Troy Dannon as the coach or as the athletic director. So I think that would have happened over time, that the cultural fit would have been the same. But maybe it was that immediate impact of getting here, being like, there's resistance to this. This university isn't wanting to just change in the image of Troy Dannon as much as I thought they would that quickly, plus the opportunity of going to Nebraska. I think it's still that piece of there are jobs that matter in two conferences. And you have to go back and thank Jen Cohen and still the one person who is there, Anne-Marie Causa, as the university president.
And Kalen DeBoer.
And Kalen, that's what I'm saying, the one person who is there, because two of the people who helped this transition are not. But being in the Big Ten meant that Troy Dannon was only going to leave for one of 30. What is the number, 36?
I believe it's 34.
Because there's less teams in the SEC. There was only going to be one of those jobs that Troy Dannon would have left for right now. There might be more in the future, but being in one of those conferences, the gravity of the UW athletic director job means that almost, not completely, but almost any person coming from a place smaller than that, having the opportunity to go in and being athletic director in the Big Ten is a huge opportunity for them. So I think you still have to kind of look back. That's the most important piece here. And basically everybody who made that transition is gone now. And everybody after them is benefiting from it, including people like Danny Sprinkle and being able to have that opportunity as Danny Sprinkle. If this program was still part of the zombie Pac-10 or something, if there was a Pac-10 without UCLA, USC, I don't know what it would have looked like. And an opportunity in the Big Ten would have raised its hand for Danny Sprinkle. He might be at that program. He might be at Vanderbilt right now. So I do think that's kind of what we have to come back to is for Troy Dannon, he left for another Big Ten job. It's debatable, Nebraska versus UW, what they look like. I do like just a little bit of building up some rivalries within the Big Ten. We already had kind of the historical rivalry with Nebraska, but it's like, bring it on. Whatever we need. Like it's like we played Michigan and we lost our athletic director. We lost the athletic directors to two other Big Ten programs. UW's like the freaking, we're the hipster program of the Big Ten.
We're the Utah State of athletic directors, is what you're saying.
I'm not willing to take that. We're like A24. You know what I mean? Like, we do it when it's cool, right? You like those other programs can be the big blockbusters or whatever, but we do everything first.
Well, I thought Christian Capel had a really good piece on Montlake, his Substack home that broke down, like, look, the athletic directors, they're responsible for facilitating some of this. They're not the players who create these memories. They're not the coaches who we visibly see on the sidelines, game in and game out. It's ultimately just not necessarily that important a position.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I think long-term athletic director is going to become a more important position in the modern NCAA. I think they're going to look more like football presidents and people like that, like an NFL team president, I think is what the athletic director is going to look like. And those are
Can
important positions.
you name the president of First and Goal?
I don't mean that. I mean more like what John Schneider is.
No, they're not, because the coaches still have the responsibility for, the personnel. So, and I do not agree with that assessment. I don't think an athletic director is ever going to have that kind of oversight. I think it's the president of the business operations of the football team, and or the owner of the football team, really, because you're making the hiring and firing decisions, though those are the most important things probably you can do, but just extremely difficult to evaluate because the sample size is tiny.
Yeah.
So, all right, well,
There haven't been any names that have been thrown around for athletic director.
Christian Capel had a list, the Seattle Times had a list.
Can you give me a few names for the, I'm just out of curiosity for me.
I
This is
forget.
like a conversation that we would be having. I just want to hear.
I suppose so. I just, to me, it's so pointless because
I'm
Troy
just
Dannon
curious
wasn't on the list when
the
we did this
type
6 months
of
ago.
person that anybody is even thinking.
Well, Pat Chun from Washington State.
I feel like he's done actually a pretty excellent job,
Oh,
right?
without question.
Did Pat Chun come over from Oregon? Is that right or no?
I forget at this point. Jeremiah Donati, who is the athletic director at TCU and has a bunch of Northwest ties. Mark Harlan, the athletic director at Utah, the senior deputy AD at Tennessee, Alan Green, former UW staffer and Nevada athletic director Stephanie Rempe, Houston athletic director Chris Pesman, and Washington interim AD Aaron O'Connell.
Pat Chun was at Ohio State and then Florida Atlantic.
Pesman was apparently one of the finalists, the four finalists that were made public. Delaware athletic director Chrissy Rowick and Virginia deputy athletic director Ed Scott were the other apparent finalists when Troy Dannon got the job.
Who was
So
the
you were
first one? Pesman? What is their
Chris
name? Or
Pesman from Houston.
I it's so funny. I was looking yesterday, I was looking at Kelvin Sampson. What a freaking coach.
Did he take Washington State to the NCAA tournament? He did, right?
what I think one time he took
Yeah.
Washington State to the NCAA
Well,
tournament.
when you've only been four times in 40 years, one is a lot.
That's kind of wild that they
One
weren't
usually
named.
gets you the next job, in his case, Oklahoma.
But the success that I think I didn't realize that it was because of recruiting violations or whatever that he had to leave coaching in Indiana. I was like, so did he just fail at Indiana? I was like, no, he was awesome for two seasons at Indiana. And then, like, Indiana would probably, had that not happened, be one of the best programs in the country. If I was Indiana, I'd be pissed about the NCAA taking away maybe the best coach in the entire country from them.
Samson's done an incredible job at Houston. A little worrisome on Sunday night, given that they are my NCAA tournament pick. I don't know if you've looked at the leaderboard of our March Madness poll lately. We'll have that update
Is it Nate?
on the weekly
I feel like
pod.
Nate is always good at this stuff.
No, but I'm number two.
Oh God, of course you are.
You are a little lower in the
My rallying around Michigan State didn't work.
rankings. It certainly did not.
I mean, it's been such a chalk year, more or less, like the Sweet 16.
Well, we'll see if we get a press when we get to press conference for Danny Sprinkle and more details on the coaching staff, as well as obviously, once again, we've got a, I mean, there was going to be an offseason to transact either way when you looked at the number of fifth-year seniors on this year's UW roster, but now even that much more significant transact to continue to follow in college basketball in the weeks
Oh,
to come.
I think it is going to be a completely new roster for the most part, which I don't bring it on. It's a new roster every year. So at least I think the hope is from what we have learned about Danny Sprinkle, and this was not evidence that we had about Mike Hopkins before, and he didn't have head coaching experience, is that Danny Sprinkle has been able to take players in circumstances where they weren't the highest rated recruits, where that wasn't their first opportunity. It wasn't the, you know, the best available transfer location, and has turned those players and those teams into NCAA tournament teams. And that's kind of all you can ask for in a college basketball head coach, men's college basketball head coach. So
One last piece of news. I'm seeing this from Matt Norlander at CBS Sports, who actually had the Vanderbilt report, but and other people may have that as well, but a 6-year contract for Danny Sprinkle.
Fair enough. But given all of that, his ability to take teams to the NCAA tournament from those situations, you just hope that it'll happen here at UW and that he's able to have that transition, but seems like the best possible candidate for the University of Washington to do so. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited about UW men's basketball for the first time in years.
It's a weird feeling to have. I agree. And very different from when
also beat a Sweet 16 team this year, baby.
Yeah. now you're broken saying it because of this. It's very different from when
for the record, I just want to be explicitly clear. I am not pro Gonzaga for any reason.
It's a very different feeling from when Lorenzo Omar was fired and I said that I might not be a UW fan at all in men's basketball going forward.
You're like PFD commenter. You're like making like extreme statements. Let
the record show that my level of following UW men's basketball in the last 7 years has been a lot lower than it was before that.
It's the winning. It is the winning that matters. That is what it comes down to. Winning games is what is making you a UW basketball fan. I mean, you are at your core, you're going to be like at base level, but it can fluctuate. I mean, I've told the children all the time, UW men's basketball was the number one sport that I cared about, right? If you could have taken...
I like that you're like, children, gather around, come sit in prophecy. UW men's basketball was what's important.
So it's such a crazy thing to think about, or I'm like, I literally cared about no other team. I bought football tickets for the right to go to basketball games. I'm like, this was a time that existed. I feel like I'm like, it wasn't that long ago. None of you were born, of course, but it was only a brief 18 years ago or something.
But it is possible it could happen again.
But if the program fucks around for 18 years, all of a sudden you lose some fans along the way.
It wasn't 18 years. They did make the Sweet 16 in 2010, right? It's not that long ago, but it's still a long time.
But there has been a time that UW basketball was a central sport to the city of Seattle. Games were packed. They were exciting. People cared about it. It's not like it can't happen. I don't believe in this competition thing. I think that I don't give a shit if the Sounders are here, if the Kraken are here, whatever. If UW men's basketball is good, people will be there and be excited about it, period. And they haven't been. The winning hasn't happened enough that people have gotten to that point that players want to come play here. And we hope that Danny Sprinkle is the one who can turn around that program.
All right, we'll have the regular weekly pod for you on Wednesday, but wanted to get this up in the meantime. Thanks so much for listening.
I feel like we have to for one time, old time's sake. Troy Dannon, retire, bitch! Come on. He went to fucking Nebraska. Have fun, buddy.
On the first day of the NCAA tournament, just a wild time in where he managed to like attend two different of his team's NCAA tournament games in the first 3 days on the job.
And lose in the first round.
Well, the women did win their first round game before losing in Corvallis to Oregon State yesterday. So there you go.
Bye, Troy.